Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us, an old friend, Dr. Lee Marengoff from Marist University. He's the director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion. You know the Marist poll. Welcome back, Lee.
Hey, I was thinking earlier when I did this first, but I think we're talking maybe 25, I don't know how many years, but it's great to be back always.
Oh, my goodness. You've been doing this well over that time. It's got to be close to 30 years now, Lee, as the first, the producer of this show and now hosting. I remember all those years and your dedication to public media, your willingness to come on, talk about the numbers, engage with us. You've, I don't think, ever said no.
No. I definitely did. Well, first of all, to Alan Shartok, you don't say no.
That's true.
But also right now, I think this is a time, obviously, when the voices of public radio and are very important to be heard. And I know that you guys have such an engaged audience that is willing to make sure that you guys do well during this period. So I think that's important to have you.
And you're part of it as well, Dr. Lee Marengoff from the Marist poll, because you are one other source that we use to help us understand our world. And when it comes to New York State government and politics, you're on that very subject this week. And that has to do with the New York City mayoral race, which is being followed, I think, not only in New York, but around the country. Even the president has thoughts on this race. So what is your latest poll finding out?
Sure. You know, we can talk a lot about unwrapping some of the reasons behind it. But basically, Mondani has come out of obscurity to topple Andrew Cuomo and others in the Democratic primary. And now as we get close to the general election, we're seeing among likely voters that he has a 21-point advantage, 45 to 24, in a four-way race, which includes current Mayor Adams and Republican candidate Curtis Sliwa. So 21 points is a stark figure to have, and there's been a lot of talk about possibly some of the others dropping out and sort of have Cuomo go one-on-one with Mondani. In that case, Mondani's lead gets cut roughly in half, and it is still a double-digit lead, 10 points for Mondani over Cuomo. And as I say, we can talk a lot of the reasons about it. One of the things I thought was really stark is here you have a relative newcomer to the political scene. His favorability rating with New York likely voters is 52%. His negative is 40%. Cuomo's is just the opposite. He has a 39% favorable rating and 59% view him as unfavorable. So Cuomo's attempt to drive up Mondani's negatives haven't really worked, and Cuomo is obviously in this race with some baggage of his own, a sizable amount. So that's sort of the landscape right now, and we can talk about other things related to that. So I'm happy to swing away. If you throw the ball over the plate, I'll be happy to take a swing.
All right, let's start with a curveball. Do endorsements matter when it comes to the movement of the polling numbers? So, for example, we're seeing a non-endorsement from the president on Curtis Sliwa. You know, he certainly hasn't endorsed anyone specifically yet, but we're hearing rumors that he wants the field cleared for Cuomo. He'd rather see Cuomo win than the progressive, or as they call him, the socialist or communist, Mondani. So, you know, do endorsements do anything when it comes to poll numbers?
They don't necessarily move great amount of numbers. I think what he may or may not do behind the scenes or, in transparency, could have an impact. Obviously, if the other guys would stay on the ballot, but they would, suspend their campaigns and would no longer be active. And that does have, it's not a decider, but it certainly would change the narrative and the trajectory of the race. As I said, Mondani's lead gets cut in half roughly. So I think in that case, you know, it could have a bearing just because of, you know, the shuffling. Could backfire also, because one thing in New York you don't want to be doing is looking like you're, you know, working, you know, the Donald Trump card. His favorability in the same poll was 33% and 65% of likely Democrat, likely voters in the city are thumbs down on President Trump. So, you know, you don't want to look like you did a backroom deal. And I think that would, you know, as I say, that would backfire for sure. I'm of a school, you know, all things being equal, that endorsements, you know, don't have a huge impact typically. I believe candidates win and lose it on their own. But I think in this case, one of the things that Governor Hochul did by endorsing Mondani is, you know, he's not gotten, you know, the statewide elected officials or his other major Democratic leaders to endorse him, despite his being, you know, the clear favorite at this point. And I think, you know, that's, you know, kind of interesting. And Hochul, in a sense, now for Mondani being a newcomer, you know, kind of credentializes him a little bit, provides some legitimacy to his candidacy. Obviously, there's no love lost between Governor Hochul and former Governor Cuomo. You know, so that's a card she's not reluctant to play in terms of endorsing Mondani. But the other thing I think that's interesting to note is she could conceivably benefit more from Mondani, from the endorsing Mondani, than Mondani does from getting her endorsement. So, for example, one of the things that I think this, you know, shows to is, so she's going to be facing presumably a primary against her lieutenant governor, and it would be an attack on her from the left, the progressive side. So if Mondani were to return the compliment to her when she's running for election, that might kind of inoculate her from the Delgado's entrance into the race. So in a sense, this could be a very convenient endorsement for both Mondani and for her for doing the endorsement.
Ah, the politics that make strange bedfellows. Well, Lee Meringoff, yeah. Dr. Lee Meringoff from the Merritt Institute of Public Opinion, you know, when it comes to this race, there's a known quantity. Andrew Cuomo is the former governor, and as you pointed out, his scandal-plagued past also is there. And yet, name recognition is important in elections. And the opposite is probably true, right, of Mamdani. He's a newcomer. He's not as well known. He's got a lot of nice ideas, but he hasn't had the governance yet or, you know, the experience yet that New Yorkers know about.
Yeah, totally. And he doesn't have that kind of experience. And, you know, in a sense, he's now this kind of new style politician who really gets to define himself and what the appeal is really generational in some ways. And, you know, the vote electorate, you know, we've seen it nationally. We've had a change election almost every time since 2000. And we certainly see it in New York City, where two-thirds of the electorate think the city is headed in the wrong direction, and slightly fewer than a third think the city's, you know, doing better than it has. 85% find that it's very difficult to afford to live in the city. Only 14% say they do. So this is an electorate that's really welcoming or open to the idea of someone who's, you know, a new generation kind of candidate. And he did motivate in the primary, you know, a young new voter and sometimes a disengaged voter. I find it ironic that there are people who, you know, obviously older, but would have supported a Barack Obama, would support a Bernie Sanders, would also get into the arena with a Donald Trump and now a Mondani. There's a certain slice of the electorate that is looking for someone who will shake things up. So when these candidates typically do well, these change, you know, candidates like AOC, you know, unseating a long-term Democrat congressman, what it is they really just are catching that, you know, strong wind calling for change. And I think that's what Mondani has done. And I think, you know, I would say, and they pay people a lot more money than I make to make these judgments, but I think Cuomo's running kind of an old-style campaign where you think if you bring the facts about someone's record to the face of the voters, they will make the right choice. And, you know, Donald Trump may be wrong on the issues a lot of times, and public opinion is not in his corner on the issues, but that doesn't shake his core value, core constituency one bit. And I think for everybody who thought Trump is done because he said such and such, it just didn't happen. And I think a lot of the old rules don't apply. So Cuomo now is running on experience mostly, and he thinks that these are difficult times. You need somebody who's been around the track. Well, that's also battle scars, and that cuts both ways. And Mondani's ideas, they can say he's risky. They can say it's pie in the sky and, you know, not going to, you know, ever see the light of day, that he doesn't know how to govern. But that's not his appeal. His appeal is the shake-it-up change and also a progressive, you know, being the most progressive. And frankly, if you're running in New York City, you want to be the most progressive of the candidates. That's the, you know, the history of New York is, all things being equal, that happens unless, you know, a Bloomberg breaks through or something like that, and that has a whole different dynamic. But so he's really in the driver's seat, and you know what is being thrown his way, you know, it's not sticking. And I think, you know, Cuomo has to, you know, there's things he could be saying to go after and, you know, get a piece of the progressive vote. And you know, the notion that when he was governor, he took the leadership on same-sex marriage, that the nation, you know, he was, you know, stepped up to a plate before others. And now he could clearly say, I did that. I'm a progressive in a lot of ways in terms of my record. And right now, same-sex marriage is, you know, something that's being threatened. And I'll tell you, I put it through as governor, and as mayor, I'll make sure it stays. And I think that's an argument that if I was, you know, again, I don't live in the world of political consultants, but I think he's missing an opportunity because he got to take some of this huge support. Mondani's getting 86% of those New Yorkers who think they're very liberal, and 65% of people just think they're liberal. So he's getting a huge number among the group that's the most, as the most voters in New York, the progressive liberal group. You can't win New York just by getting conservatives and very conservative voters. There's not enough of them, even if the other two candidates who are much more conservative than Mondani, certainly, even if they get out. It's just, it's not in the formula for success. And I'm not sure just through how many people his experience is, I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword because there's things in his record, obviously, that he would not want people to be thinking of when it comes to Cuomo's experience.
He is Dr. Lee Merengoff, director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion at Marist University. The well-known Marist poll, of course, we're talking about the New York City mayoral race. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of things just to comment on here, Lee, which is, it seems like when it comes to the Democratic Party, at least in New York, if we look at this, now let's put aside Governor Hochul's metamorphosis now in endorsing Mamdani, but a lot of centrist Democrats, more centrist than left Democrats, seem to be afraid of embracing a candidate like Mamdani, yeah, because of the label socialist. Democratic socialist. Republicans go further. They call him a communist. Congresswoman mm-hmm. Elise Stefanik shortened it, called him a commie. And so, you know, you've got this thing sure. that is coming down from the Republican Party and certainly from the top, President Trump on down, that traps Democrats often. They don't want to be labeled socialists or communists. Mm-hmm. And yep. yet your own poll shows that New Yorkers are upset about affordability and the ideas yes, sure. that Mondani puts out and that others like Senator Sanders and Alexandria yep. Ocasio-Cortez going around the country fill stadiums with are these oh, yeah. ideas that many would label socialists or communists. So are Democrats in New York now going through some sort of metamorphosis? I see DiNapoli has now endorsed Mamdani, and I yeah. saw this morning that Jay Jacobs, the Democratic Party chair, is leaning away from it. So, you know, yeah. it's a very interesting thing.
Well, it's very hard not to endorse the person who won your primary. So you know, that means by non-endorsing him, you're non-endorsing the Democrat nominee, which is an awkward position to be. I think this raises a couple of very important points, which get even bigger than New York, because obviously in New York City, it's easier to, you know, overcome those kind of labels. Although I must say, even if you aren't a self-proclaimed socialist, like Bernie Sanders and Mondani say they are, you know, you're still vulnerable to that attack. I mean, Barack Obama was called a socialist too. And so the attack doesn't necessarily have to follow a logical, you know, progression of what your positions have been or what you say you are. That can be there anyway. But I think there's two things on this that I think I'd like to point out. One, I think that, and we see this in our current difference between the Republican and Democrat Party. Republican voters fall in line. Democratic voters fall in love. So when it comes to Donald Trump, where he was, you know, everybody was saying, you know, he doesn't have the party, blah, blah, blah. And wow, everybody, you know, in Washington, not everybody, but almost every Republican, you know, no matter what he says, does, or is involved with, you know, steps in line. And they just take that. And, you know, people who have said, you know, the Marco Rubios and the Vances of the world who've said pretty horrible things about Trump not too long ago, now basically just stop and reverse that and now think he's walking, you know, on water and totally totally acceptable. It is his Republican Party. I mean, he's become the Republican Party. The Democrats, as I say, fall in love. So what happens to Democrats? You get a primary, let's say, between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and the people really feel very strongly about their support. When the primary ends and someone gets the nomination, you know, this notion of that they fall in love with the candidate, well, you know, the Bernie Sanders people skipped the line, stayed home. So I think that's the whole issue. And then I think when you overlay that tendency among Democrats to, you know, stick with whoever their first love is in politics in a particular race, I think the Democrats also right now are very much in search for the soul of the party. And I think there is a split, and it's generational. And, you know, here I am in my 70s, and I'm still younger than a lot of the major Democratic figures, you know, the Schumers of the world, the Bernie Sanders of the world, anybody whose name is Clinton. You know, these are still major voices in the Democratic Party, although that is changing with some of these newer Democrats. But I think if we're really, Democratic Party has a real split in its direction between a pragmatic, moderate view, which says basically, let's get the core Democrats, but let's also get moderate voters. Let's try to get, you know, win among independents, win among moderates. There's another school, which is what we're talking about, which is this new generation, which is, you know, very much in the wing of the progressive element within the party. And basically, they want to say this election, whatever election is, has to mean something or else it's not worth it. So they are much more ideologically committed and much more, not to say that the first group doesn't have principles, but they really want their principles and their policy stances to really dominate the thinking and to take control of the party. So now you have a unified Republican Party for all intents and purposes. Who knows, you know, when the parade passes Trump by, but right now that's where it is. And then on Democrats, you have Democrats, which are almost like two separate parties right now, the Mondanis and the Cuomos, the new school, the group who has this, you know, cultural following, and the someone who's been around the track with all the bruises, cuts, and scars that go with that. So, you know, I think we're at a very interesting, is probably a week where a very pivotal time, obviously, in our nation. And, you know, the Democratic Party, you know, has difficulty getting that unity in a country that's, for all intents and purposes, between Democrats and Republicans, 50-50. So, yeah, there's red states and blue states. But when you come down to it, the Senate and the Congress and the White House all get determined lately by a very razor-thin margin. And now we come to the midterm elections, and we'll see if the Democrats, in a sense, can get their act together when they have difficulty. So that sort of puts the New York city situation in a broader context about what the nature of Democratic support is and what direction the Democratic Party wants to do to move in the face of the unity of and the force that Donald Trump has brought to our political universe. Long answer, but that's a real, I think, critical question that you raise, because I think that's really what's underlying an awful lot of what's going on politically and electorally within the Democratic Party.
Dr. Lee Merengoff from the Marist Institute of Public Opinion. Lee, you can have as long an answer you want, you see, because we're public media. We allow for longer discussion, for some context, right?
Yeah, in my classes, though, you have to mix in a little anecdote. Although I must say, my students think each year I get a little smarter because I can talk about things that are much longer ago because I lived through those. And so, for example, last night we were talking about, you know, honesty in politics and, you know, the notion of presidents not telling the truth. And we started talking about the Vietnam War. And I can't tell you how many people in my class I was, you know, opening up a discussion to people that they didn't really like, for example, 1968, which was such a pivotal year in our politics, as I assume some of your audience recalls, you know, and it starts with the Tet Offensive, and then we have the New Hampshire primary, and then we have Kennedy getting in, the original Robert Kennedy, and then you have Johnson pulling out, and then 5 days later after that, Martin Luther King gets assassinated, and too much after that, Robert Kennedy does, and then we end up with the Democratic Convention in Chicago. It's just as talk about disunity.
Oh, my goodness!
Disunified of the party, and so you know, I look very smart to my students because I can rattle off all that. But then again, I was old enough to live through it.
Indeed.
So, it's not history for me. It's just my memory.
Well, it's amazing to me. So many of my students, they were born after 9/11, and you know, they don't have that as part of their memory. They know about it, certainly, but they're not aware of it, what it meant politically. I had to show them a clip of President George W. Bush at the time standing on the pile. And when somebody yelled out, "We can't hear you," he said, "Well, I hear you, and the rest of the world will hear from you." Exactly. Yeah. That baptism by fire, which was quite something to watch unfold. You know, let's try to impress the students a little bit more. I'll throw this at you. So in your political pollster mind, Lee, what scenario do you see? Now, let's say, for example, President Trump gets Eric Adams, the current mayor of New York City, to go away, to take some sort of position and go away. And, you know, Curtis Sliwa, he's already been talking negatively about. That's the president of the United States. And he's a Republican, Curtis Sliwa. And then you've got the matchup that you said drops the lead from Mamdani in half. You've got Mamdani against Cuomo. Is there any scenario, see, even with a 10-point lead, that Cuomo comes out on top?
Absolutely. And New York also, and the primary showed this most recently, is, you know, you can end with a big surge and a big flourish activity and momentum matters. But Cuomo has to, in a sense, hard for him to do, but he has to redefine himself and place a different emphasis on his campaign. One of the things he does have going for him, if these candidates suspend their candidacy, you know, Cuomo among likely voters has 24%. With the other candidates out of it, his numbers go to 39%. So when you look at the closing gap between him and Mondani in the four-way race, which is, as I said, 21 points, and it becomes 10, Cuomo is picking up 15 points in that, and Mondani goes from 45 to 49. So Mondani doesn't get a whole lot of the benefit. You know, you always get some, but, you know, by 3-1, the numbers in that case go to Cuomo. So that's one thing. And then the campaign would get new life just because the numbers would look better. You know, and even though we can say now the numbers will get better, it's nothing like when they do get better. So I think that's a big thing also. Then I think the other next best chance he has, or perhaps the last best chance he has, there will be debates. And if it is head-to-head and he's able in that instance to provide what I consider an improved message, I don't rule it out. But I think right now his appeal, you know, he's winning, you know, very conservative voters. He's winning conservative voters. But as I said earlier, the very liberal and the liberal and the moderates are not in his corner. And so he needs to, in the closing weeks of the campaign, talk less than about Mondani just being risky, be more specific, and do emphasize, if you're Andrew Cuomo, that you did do things as governor that were certainly in the tradition of the Democratic Party and in its progressive roots. You can't. See, I'm thinking back of the 2004 campaign for president when you had John Kerry and Bush running. And John Kerry obviously had been a war hero. He'd been very active in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Swift boat.
Swift boat. Yep, you saw it coming. And so, you know, what they did was politically and strategically, they took away the strong argument of Kerry's about his military record and made it into a liability. Now, you're not going to be able to do that as easily with Mondani because he doesn't have that kind of detailed record to redefine, but you sure can. As governor, Andrew Cuomo can point to things he did with education, things he did with housing, things he did in healthcare, and clearly, as I talked earlier about the same-sex marriage and things of that sort, that he can point to. He needs to take away the monopoly, for all intents and purposes, that Mondani has with the largest group of voters. You can't win a presidential election if you cede Florida, Texas, New York, and California. You know, you gotta take some to make yourself competitive. And right now, Cuomo's not doing that. And words of the wise, he's got to really go, I think, in that direction. And he does have a track record. But you have to define that in ways where this electorate may respond.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest has been Dr. Lee Meringhof. He is, of course, the director of the well-known Marist Institute of Public Opinion, the Marist Poll at Marist University. We thank you, as always, for joining us to explain the numbers. They're just a snapshot in time. We all know that. But it's good to have a sense of where we're headed in the New York City mayoral race. Lee, thank you so much for joining us on the Capital Connection.
My pleasure, always, and good luck navigating these difficult waters that you have as an organization. I know you guys are going to be standing on your feet and standing tall.
Thank you. I know we will, too. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.